All right, let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends. And they'll deliver them discreetly right to your doorstep. And you can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with the promo code BROS. Tried a bunch of their gummies myself, and it's wild how different each one feels. They're sleepy time gummies. Knock me out in about 15 minutes flat. No hangovers, no grogginess. I wake up feeling amazing the next day. And their epic euphoria gummies, well, they're perfect for those days when nothing's going right and you just need to hit the reset button on your shitty mood. What makes these different is how they've paired THC and other cannabinoids with herbs and adaptogens. You're just not going to find gummies like this in a dispensary or anywhere else, for that matter. And they've got gummies for literally everything. Immune supports, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity, sexual arousal. And each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no BS. And they can ship to almost every single state in the United States of America. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off with their first order with code BROS. So head on over to Mood.com. Browse their amazing selection of functional gummies and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use the promo code BROS at checkout to save 20% off your first order. Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get, well, not that good at it. You could do about half of your New Year's resolutions. You could, I don't know, join a CrossFit gym or something like that. Or you can start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. So, man, if you're out there and you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your own home. Hims provides you with convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work all from the comfort of your couch. Choose from personalized, chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find out which one works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online. So there is no uncomfortable doctor visits. Just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if a treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/drinkingbros. That's Hims.com/drinkingbros for your personalized hair loss options. Hims.com/drinkingbros.
Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience with a simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, Companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelance profiles, get help drafting a job post, or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them to take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com today and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. Upwork.com.
Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Sit back, relax, and grab a fucking drink.
Yeah, welcome to Drinking Bros, kids. Last year, we had a guest on the show named Ben Shapiro. You might have heard of him. At the end of the episode, I was thanking him for a luncheon that he invited us to with him and his producing partner who's on the show today. And we were grateful to pick their brain about the industry, how to create a network. We gained invaluable knowledge that day at that lunch, and we're fortunate enough to have the man himself on, the co-CEO of Daily Wire, the God King, Jeremy Boring. How are you, sir?
Well, it's never a bad day to be a God King, I can tell you that.
I didn't even know that you were Syrian or whatever the hell it was.
Who?
What's that guy? The tall dude from 300?
Xerxes?
Xerxes, yeah.
Persian, yeah.
I mean, you got the look, but I don't know. You just never want to assume
you don't. It's a beautiful background, by the way, Jeremy. What made you pick that bright blue back there? That's nice.
You know, this was not my doing, but it is. It couldn't be bluer.
it's very avatarish.
We've gotten to a place up here where every time they ask me to shoot something, they put me in a different corner because every one of our normal production spaces is just in full-time use.
Yeah, you're jammed up. You guys moved from LA to Nashville, right?
Yeah, moved to Nashville 3 days after the election in 2020. And, you know, we're loving it. The state assembly passed a resolution welcoming us. The governor had us over for dinner, you know, almost exactly like what it was like living in California for us. we've enjoyed it.
What you're saying is Gavin Newsom never had you and the boys over for some French laundry?
No, he threw a party after we left. Yeah, you know, that was the difference.
One thing you did, you're all over the news today for your razor company. We had the same issue. Harry's was one of our advertisers as well, and then they went woke. Dan made a video telling the audience that we were dropping them. You guys took it to an extreme. You created Jeremy's Razors, and it said, "I hate Harry's." .com. It has exploded. Your video, last I checked, was at 17 or 18 million views for the company itself. What made you jump into the razor game?
Revenge, mostly. Grudge holding.
Yeah.
You know, what it comes down, I mean, like you guys, you know, we've been, advertisers come and advertisers go. You try to be good partners to them when they're spending money with you. You know, I always think it's a real privilege to be able to tell people about good products. Obviously, we don't take every advertiser who comes a knocking, right? So it's a trust game with your audience. They have to put their faith in you that you're only going to recommend good products. And Harry's is a great product. We're happy to have them as a advertising partner. I don't care that they pulled their money. You know, you can pull your money from our shows because the ads aren't performing. Your company's going through tough financial times. You don't like the cut of our jib. It's none of my business, right? That's just the market at work. You're going to spend with us when it's the right thing for you to do. For your business, you're going to stop when you think it's the wrong thing to do for your business. That's fine. What burned me up is that when Harry's left, like so many other advertisers who've left us over the years for virtue signaling reasons, they had to make a public statement. And in their public statement, they said that our views, in this case, that gender dysphoria has historically been categorized as a mental illness, which is a simple statement of fact, but that represents what they called, quote, inexcusable views, which, you know, when you do something like that, when you betray your advertising partner, someone who's leveraged their own credibility to expose you to their audience, an audience that you knew was conservative in the case of the Daily Wire, you were happy to take money from our customers, but you don't want to be associated with our customers. I find that pretty inexcusable myself. And I also think that it's an attack on my business, because it signals to other advertisers that the only excusable thing to do would be to also pull all their money, which is why, and I'm sure you guys have experienced this, these moments where advertisers start virtue signaling like this, it's usually not just one, it's usually several. There's a cascading effect because, again, one advertiser says to all the other advertisers, get all the gettin's good. So I've been tired of that for a long time. I think that we only put up with it because it's sort of this vestigial or leftover belief from the old days of linear broadcast when the network had a major interest in keeping right. advertisers happy. And so the individual show had to just sort of take their lumps. But like you guys, nobody controls our access to distribution. Nobody stands between us and our audience. So why would I take that lying down? Why wouldn't I tell my audience, Harry's doesn't want your business. Yeah. Harry's thinks that your values are inexcusable. They don't want value, quote, values misalignment with people who believe the things that you want or that you do. So that was my original premise, was just you might as well punch back like you guys did with Harry's in a similar situation. But mm-hmm. the thing that pushed me to actually start a razor company was this realization that there's this bad cycle. You guys don't deal with it, but we deal with it over on the right all the time, which is this sort of nonprofit mentality. And the nonprofit mentality says that every time you lose another battle in the culture, your only response to that should be bitch loudly and beg for donations. And so you have this sort of this never-ending lose, bitch, and beg cycle. And I wanted to break it. You know, boycotts don't work. They're temporary because we still need good products. If we really want to do something about this, we have to build alternatives. And so I think what I want people to know about my company is that, you know, that's our attitude. We're for-profit guys. We want to win. We don't want to complain. We don't want to beg. We want to build a future. We want to build alternatives. And we want to create market incentives for better behavior. And we want to have a good time while we're doing it. And so I think, hopefully, that commercial that we put out for the razor company just communicated all of that. Like, we're fighters. We're enjoying life. We're not just grieving the past like conservatives often do. And we're having a good time building something new.
Well, that's kind of flipped, right? It seems like the left is the group that's doing all the grieving these days. You hate to see it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you don't understand what I mean by that, just look at the meme games for the left and the right. Mm-hmm. And the right is just so much better at it now. And it's because the only way you can do that is if you don't take yourself too seriously and you have a keen sense of irony, which means right. being aware of what the fuck's actually going on in the world and making fun of it. But if you like, they have become so delusional now, and that's part of it. That's part of social Marxism, is to blur the line so much that the only arbiter of truth becomes the state. That's all part of it. People should really look into James Lindsay and read the work that he's been doing over the last couple of years and understand that. But it's wrapped up in that phrase they use. What did they say? Inexcusable views. It sounds a lot like what Justin Trudeau said about these truckers, which was they have unacceptable views, I should be able to move about freely without the government mandating me to put some shit in my body. That's an unacceptable view.
Views that Trudeau never sat down and bothered to listen to, right? How does he even know what they think?
Who knows?
Exactly. And I love that you're punching back with your own company. Dan and I have done that as well. We have a hard seltzer company that's out. There was another company, we won't say who they are, seltzer-wise, who was just like, look, we don't do conservative shows. And it was like, well, look, I'm conservative. Dan is in the middle. What the fuck does it matter anyway? So we created our own. You've created your own razor company that is massive, because you're right. The boycott thing doesn't work. If you followed every hashtag boycotts on Twitter, you wouldn't have any clothes to wear or cars to drive or anything to shave. I mean, everything across the board.
Well, this one was particularly stupid because it was one Twitter comment that they referenced when they ended the deal. It was about that show that Michael Knowles did with, I think it's Nicolosi is the guy's name. I think this is how you pronounce it. And the guy did have some views that Michael consistently rebuffed during the broadcast. It wasn't like he was like, oh yeah, fucking, we're all homophobic. Like, you know, it wasn't like a cheerleading party. He said some stuff and Michael's like, okay, that's true. And then he said some other stuff. He goes, okay, you've made a leap that is not true now, right? That's how the conversation went. And these people, well, actually one dude was like, no, hell no. One guy on Twitter can change a fucking multi-million-dollar company's trajectory. That's crazy.
Really, really think about this. It was a high school student. They had two followers on their Twitter account. The Daily Wire has, if you include our talent, we have 48 million social media followers. Just imagine how out of whack the power dynamic is in the country when a major company like Harry's is afraid of a high school girl with two Twitter followers and has no fear whatsoever of publicly attacking a major media company with 48 million social media followers. It just goes to show you that conservatives, by and large, have done nothing to actually bloody these guys for the last generation. It never even occurred to Harry's that they could be picking a fight with us that would actually cost them something.
Right. Well, I mean, I think it's the same reason that first responders and military vets, such as myself, we don't like to speak up for ourselves that much, right? Mm. It's kind of not like in the culture to, like, we bitch amongst one another, but we don't let that bitching get outside of us because that's our family business. That's how we see it. And I think conservatives have played that game for too long. That's part of it. The other part is there hasn't really been a conservative or like a real conservative leader in office at the federal level since Eisenhower, I guess, right? Like it's been weird. It's just been like we're all out on rowboats, just kind of doing our own thing. And that there is there is some element to conservatism that kind of, you know, I guess makes that happen. Like we're individualists. We don't want other people involved in our business. But you're right. When it comes to these culture wars, people are finally starting to wake up a little bit. I think Trump had something to do with that. He black-pilled and red-pilled a lot of people. But for the last 40 years, it's been a slow cascade downward where one side has moved us farther and farther and farther to the left, and the conservatives have done very little to fight back against that. As a matter of fact, before the show today, one of the producers was saying that, yeah, all these Republicans are bitching about Ketanji Brown Jackson, but they're not going to pass any legislation to deal with the stuff that they see as fault with her. Like, it just won't happen. They'll just get sucked back into the establishment. So as Ross said, it's nice to see people that have the means and opportunity to do this shit actually stepping up and doing it for once.
Yeah, and tell the audience, Jeremy, how many razors you've sold, or is it based on subscription?
Yeah, so it's a subscription company, right? So we sell the razor kit, and accompanying that kit is the blade subscription. So you get the recurring revenue of the subscriptions, the customer gets the convenience of having those blades delivered to them. And we've sold, in our first 10 days, we sold 50,000 razors and razor subscriptions.
Holy shit.
I actually didn't check the numbers before I came over, but I'm sure it's well in excess of 55,000 now.
My God, man. Are you on Shopify all day long, just kind of thumbing through it like kids on Coinbase?
Well, you know, listen, for context, it took us 4 years to sell our first 40,000 Daily Wire subscriptions at the Daily Wire. So, you know, to do this in essentially 2 weeks, I think it just goes to show a couple things. One, things have changed. You know, the audience is ready for this fight in a way that they've never really been primed for it before. And I also think people are responding to the kind of optimism of the whole thing, kind of what I was alluding to earlier. And you guys know this from your hard seltzer business. You know it from even, you know, your work with Black Rifle Coffee. That building alternatives is a fundamentally optimistic act. Mm-hmm. Building actual businesses is an optimistic act. It says, you know, we don't believe that our best days are behind us. We believe that we can create brand new things. Those things can have value. They can enrich your life. I think people are really responding to that message. You know, in some ways, you talk about that time that you guys came over and we talked a little bit about building a podcasting network. Well, that was a big meeting for us, too, in terms of seeing that, you know, there are more places than media where you can add value into people's lives because people are just tired of being kicked around.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, Ben's book was just, I think the day prior had knocked Michelle Obama off the number one chart, right?
Yeah.
Just the day prior, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a big deal. I mean, like you look down these curated lists and they are curated lists. Let's be real about that. It's not, it's not based on book sales, but even the New York Times couldn't say no to that.
Yeah. You
know, like the numbers were too crazy. And it was really interesting. You know, to see multiple, usually if you look down the New York Times right now and to select out the political books, usually they have the top 15 listed, right? There might be one from the conservative persuasion on there. But there will be like gender theory books, and Michelle Obama's probably still on there.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's wild to see that. And it's, that's why I spend a lot of time telling people to like, be conscious how you're spending your time and money. Everybody wants to cancel Disney right now, and I understand that. But I think, to your point about optimism, a better idea might be to, I don't know, start some children's programming, right? Maybe invest $100 million in it.
Ah, which you've done, Jeremy. What's the name of that? Is that PragerU?
No, it's DW Kids.
Okay.
Obviously, you know, we consider PragerU a sister company. They're very good friends of ours, and we've been involved in a lot of their content over the years. But PragerU is a not-for-profit, right? It's a nonprofit that has an educational mandate. Mm-hmm. And what we want to do is have an entertainment mandate. You know, we want to inculcate certain values in kids, sure, but as a byproduct of how much we entertain them. So, you know, we're seven scripts into our first animated kid series called Chilla Time, about a family of chinchillas. We have a show called Doodles with Noodles. We have another animated show that I haven't actually announced yet, but that is we're very close to announcing. And you know, they're just entertainment. They're something to make kids laugh. I think that what we provide that's unique in the space is that a parent won't have to worry when they sit their kids down in front of us about screening the content first or what's going to play right after the thing that they did screen. You know, they walk out of the room, episode one ends, and now you roll into something new, and it's you know, telling 14-year-old girls to cut off their breasts or something. You're not going to get any of that over at DW Kids. And if along the way we also educate kids a little bit, then that, you know, that's just an upside. You know, we were talking right before the show started about 1997, which was a great year. You know, I'm a child of that. I graduated high school in 1997. I got to grow up, I think, in the best moment in all of human history to grow up, because all this emerging technology was like right in front of us. Like when I was 18, I bought a cell phone, and I was the first guy I knew with a cell phone. I was in a rural place. They were a little bit more prevalent probably in bigger towns than they were where I was. You know, I didn't have a computer until after I graduated high school. We got to adapt all that technology because it came pretty quick in our 20s. But we got to live these childhoods without it. You know, it was a big deal to see like Joey down the street's uncle had a Playboy magazine. You saw three blurry pictures of a naked gal, and that was a big deal. Now, you know, like every 9-year-old kid in America has seen 43,000 boobs. We got to miss that. We got to be kids. We got to exist before your parents knew where you were every minute of the day. You know, you could get on your bicycle and ride away and not come back for 5 hours. And we got to have those kinds of adventures. We got to live in a world that, not that where there wasn't racism, but where racism was not a prevalent idea in our minds at all times. You know, we lived in the country that went on to elect Barack Obama, not the country that Barack Obama ruined and re-ensconced into all this racial division for his own political gain. I look at that as this amazing time of true American hegemony, you know, before the war on terror, before all the things that have come since that really have changed the country. And one of the things that we got to grow up with was Saved by the Bell and Animaniacs and Tiny Toon content that was just for us and enjoyable to us. And wasn't trying to change us or challenge us or expose us to these wild ideas. And that's what I want to recreate over with our entertainment offering for adults with DW Kids, is really just a place where we can, you know, where we can be entertained and not be lectured to. And I know that's not what people expect, especially, you know, the people who hate the Daily Wire think we're going to make Hillary's hard drive part three or some shit. But that's not what we're about. We're about making content that people want to see, not content that they want to see. And so I think that's what we're trying to do. And I think if we're able to accomplish it, it'll be a pretty unique offering.
No, and I think it's great. We had a guy on here named Cowboy Jack, and he's a drinking bro, been a listener for a long time of the program. And he hit us up and he said, "Hey, I've got this YouTube channel for kids." And he was tired of the same thing that you just mentioned, of having his kids sit around and watch other shit that had a different agenda to it going on in the background, and was forcing you to think about other things you don't want to think about as a kid, or that you should necessarily even know about as a kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's having problems on YouTube because, you know, some people say he's conservative or whatever. And he was just like, Bro, is there anywhere you can go? Because he's been demonetized and things like that. It's a child's channel where he's just going to like museums and going to aquariums and stuff as this character. And he's like, where can you go? And I was like, actually, I heard Daily Wire's doing a whole kids network for it. And yeah, we can talk about it after the show.
Yeah, but I mean, he's done, he does stuff like that. He's done stuff where he goes to like fire departments or police stations, like, you know, community engagement stuff as well. And I think that's probably what got him in trouble.
I think so like, too. Yeah.
During that time period in middle 2020, if you were pro cop in any way, it's like, whoa, buddy.
And, but he was just taking, showing children what a police station looks like or a firehouse looks like. Nothing to do with, you know tell that, me your thoughts
It wasn't Alex Jones.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's one of the reasons we got into entertainment in the first place, really. We were sitting in our boarded up offices on Ventura Boulevard in the summer of 2020. They'd made us send all of our employees home, and they had, you know, allowed these riots to go on unchecked all over the city. So it was the second time we'd boarded up for the summer. And I read, I think it was in Rolling Stone, I can't remember exactly, but I read this article about how basically it was called It's Time to Quit SVU. A reference to Law and Order SVU, and he said, you know, even though Mariska Hargitay is a badass feminist icon who takes male sex offenders and beats their asses every week, the show nevertheless reinforces the false trope that some police are good. And I read it to Caleb Robinson, my co-CEO, and I said, you know, dude, this would be like if in 1960 Hollywood decided that it couldn't make Westerns anymore. 40% of the shows on TV are about cops. The idea that you're not going to be able to make cop shows in Hollywood is, what are they going to make? Like, they're announcing to us that they're about to leave the audience behind. Somebody ought to do something about it, you know. For not only should you do something about it because it's the right thing to do, it's a great opportunity. If they're going to abandon an audience, if they're going to abandon things that work, why wouldn't we do the things that work? Why wouldn't we go speak to that audience?
Yeah, I mean, that's common sense. They can't, once they came after Paw Patrol,
yeah,
I was like, this is it.
Yeah, like we're all done. Yeah, we're all done
we
here.
We may as well get our spaceships ready, get the fuck out of here, because this exactly. plan is done.
And you guys are in a fortunate position that you actually have the funding for it, because, you know, much like myself, you have extensive Hollywood background, and you know how hard it is to get funding. You've ran a couple of different production companies in the past. You know, now that the Daily Wire has exploded, you have the funding, but the cool thing is it's not just going in your pockets, it's going out to create other businesses.
People like to hit me on Twitter and I'll say something, 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 something. And they go, says the failed actor. And I'm like, brother, I'm rich. What are you talking about? I failed and I failed again and I failed again and I tried another thing and that failed too and I kept on trying. And eventually it's like, Monty Python, you know, the fourth castle stayed or whatever. Like, I don't understand this insult that because things you've done in your past didn't work out, that somehow it invalidates the things that you're doing now that do work. You know, you guys know you've built things that matter. There's a lot of failure on the path.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of an accomplishment. So, yeah, I've had a lot of production companies and made films and worked with talented, successful Hollywood guys throughout, you know, my entire 20s and 30s. And that all brought me to this moment, I think, where I have some insights and skills that are useful in this particular pursuit. I'm proud of all of my failures. You know, I tell my team all the time, you know, my biggest ambition in life is to make a $1 billion mistake one day, because essentially what I've learned in life is that the bigger mistake you make, the bigger opportunity for a success you have on the other side if you're willing to humble yourself and learn. So,
I
think that path is really bearing fruit right now. You know, I know a lot about how not to do it from personal experience. Hopefully that'll tee us up pretty well for how to do it.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I know your partners in that company was Joel David Moore and Zachary Levi, if I'm correct, right? I did a movie with both of those guys, actually in the same movie. Super strange.
Which movie was it?
It was a movie called Stuntmen. I don't think it was very good.
Oh, but, of course, yeah.
Yeah, I was one of the leads of that, but I didn't think it was very good, but those guys played my agents.
That is a like come full circle moment. I did not make that connection.
That's strange, right? Yeah. It was an indie. There was a ton of people in it, but
Wilmer Valderrama and
yeah. James That's Franco, I don't know if he made the cut, but super bizarre guy. But working with those guys, and Zach, we saw Zachary, what, 6 or 8 months ago here in Austin. He's got a, he used to have a house in Buda. I think he's selling it. But with that being said, what do they think that you're running the biggest conservative company in the United States? Is that weird? Yeah. Because I know most of my friends in Hollywood are like, yo, dude, what the fuck? Like, I got, even my agent manager was like, man, you keep hanging out with the Black Rifle Coffee guys, man. It's not going to be good, you know?
Yeah. You know, Zach and Joel are both doing really well. You know, Zach's got his Shazam sequel coming up, which is just huge. And, you know, I was living with him back during the stuntman days. And, you know, those guys opened a lot of doors for me. Joel just came back from the Cayman Islands, where I think he shot 4 films back to back or something through his. Lord. Through his new production company. Of course, he's got all the Avatar sequels coming up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, those guys are doing great. There is sort of like the prophet in his hometown thing, you know, like I was, those guys were being very successful back in those days and I was not. And, you know, I led a men's Bible study that those guys were a part of. And, you know, and in some ways, I shouldn't say like I was there. I was probably their least successful buddy at that time. There was this gratifying moment on my 40th birthday where some of my pals, Jonathan Hay and Ben Shapiro, threw me this surprise party, and it was a genuine surprise. I mean, I'd go into all the details of how it's very hard to pull one over on me, you know? Mm-hmm. They really did get me. I walk into my favorite restaurant, which is this little pizza shack in Studio City called Reno's, you know, with like patio furniture inside the restaurant. It's been there forever. It's a real fixture.
Yep.
The best chicken Alfredo pizza probably in the world, but not the place you would expect what happens, which is, you know, this, you know, dressed to the nines crowd of 50 or 60 people comes in, among them, like Ted Cruz flew out for my 40th birthday party to surprise me. And, you know, Dennis Prager is there and all these guys, right? I mean, this really unbelievable moment. And of course, Joel was there. Zach was down in Buda, but Joel was there, and it was this really gratifying moment of Joel kind of getting to see the world that I had created, right? He knew about it as my buddy, kind of from the side, but he's not political, he's not down in the weeds with all that, you know. But here he was in this room, and Ted Cruz walks in, and Joel told me after, like, "Shit, you really did something, man." And I was like, "Yeah, I appreciate that, Joel." My favorite moment, by the way, from my 40th birthday party. The guy that runs Reno's, Nick, is one of, like, such an important part of my Hollywood life. Like, we would go there every Sunday after our home church and as a group of friends, and lunch. It was just our home away from home, right? When you live in a big city like that, where I'm from a very small town, you move to a big city, 20 million people, nobody knows you. Mm-hmm. You try to find these ways to create community. So I became a regular at a few small places where I would know the owner and, you know, could kind of get that feeling of home. And so Nick had no idea what was invading Reno's that night. You know, there's a valet outside that we hired, that my pals hired, and, you know, they brought me in an Aston Martin and all this crazy stuff. A senator's walking through, there's TV and movie stars walking through, and he's so nervous. This is not at all what he expected, right? He was like, he's Armenian. Oh, they're going to have a birthday party for Jeremy. Yes, this is good. Yeah. But here's this crazy thing going on. And at one point, they had told him that they needed to buy enough pizzas for 40 people. But he was trying to save them some money. So he was like, yes, we make 15 pizzas. They were like, no, Nick, it's going to be like, we need like 30 pizzas. No. I give you extra large, same price. You know, like he just couldn't get his head around what was going to happen. So now there's a senator and all these people there. And Nick just goes crazy and won't stop making pizzas. And he must have made 200 pizzas or something during my birthday party. And at one point, I'm sitting in a chair across from Heidi Cruz, and Ted Cruz is up giving a speech about, you know, what a great chum I am, right? You know, and I would also note Ted, you know, and it's this completely surreal moment for me, right?
Yeah.
Up walks the owner, Nick, and he has 2 piping hot pizzas. We haven't even touched the pizzas that are already on the table in front of us. Like, he's just gone crazy. He's baking pizzas like mad. He's got these 2 pizzas. He doesn't know what to do with them. In his apron, the wireless phone that he carries around starts ringing because he didn't shut down his takeout business for the night. And so he's having this kind of panic attack. He's standing between me and Ted Cruz, who's like 6 feet away from me, giving this speech. Nick hands Heidi Cruz, because he can't find anywhere to put these pizzas, a like scald, blisters on your finger, hot pizza, hands it to her. She takes it, has no idea what to do with it, and he grabs his phone and says, Rinos. And this whole thing happens. Ted Cruz doesn't miss a beat. The guy's given so many stump speeches. All you have to do is take out the like, and that's why I'm running for president, and put in, and that's why Jeremy's a good guy, you know?
Yep.
He's just like a machine. Never stops, never hesitates.
What did Heidi do with the pizza?
I took it from her, I think. I'm surprised she didn't like, I mean, it was freaking hot, but you know, what are you going to do?
And after that, were you a legend at Reno's? Did you get your photo up in there?
Oh yeah, I got a nice photo up on the wall at Reno's, you know.
Yeah, yeah, I know it very well.
It's a great spot.
it is a great spot. I want to talk about how you got connected with Ben Shapiro. There's a rumor that you guys were shooting out of your pool house back in the day. Was that true?
Yeah, that's the truth. I lived in Sherman Oaks, and I had a garage that had been kind of converted into a pool house back behind the house, and that's where we shot the first episodes of The Ben Shapiro Show and the first episodes of The Andrew Klavan Show.
That's wild. Did you know what you were doing? Did you know about RSS feeds and all that other stuff? And what year was it?
This was 2015. Ben and I had known each other for quite a while. We met through a fellow named Mark Masters, who ran a company called Talk Radio Network, which at that time was the largest private radio syndicator in the country. They had Michael Savage and Laura Ingraham. And Ben was their general counsel. Ben was introduced to Mark Masters by Andrew Breitbart. I was introduced to Mark Masters by Andrew Breitbart. But Breitbart didn't introduce me directly to Ben. It sort of went this really circuitous way. And like many people who have met Ben, we met for the first time at the Coffee Bean in Studio City. You know, Ben keeps kosher, and there, you know, normally you meet somebody, you go out for a drink, you go out for lunch or something. You can basically only go to Coffee Bean if you want to have a first meeting with Ben. So,
and there's no parking at that one in Studio City.
There is no parking at that
none.
One. So yeah, we had this great meeting, and of course I knew immediately what everyone knows about Ben. This is one of the smartest guys in the country. This is a guy with enormous potential. And I started thinking almost immediately, like, this guy needs a platform. You know, he's helping other people establish their platforms, but he really needs a platform of his own. We had a couple of small ventures that we engaged in along the way. We made some animated videos with my production company for some conservative book publishers. We started a company called Truth Revolt as part of the David Horowitz Freedom Center. A few things that Ben and I tried over the years, but in 2015, we both found ourselves with mortgages and no jobs. And our third partner, Caleb Robinson, had reached out to me about trying to get into the movie business. He was working with a high net worth family out of Texas who wanted to make an impact in culture. And I called him and said, hey, Ben and I just got fired from the Freedom Center, and we have this idea. I think we should talk. And that was the beginning of the company. We took $4.7 million of startup capital from that family in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
In month 14, we started the Daily Wire. We shot the first podcast in the pool house. In month 14, we became cash flow positive.
Wow.
We've paid for all of our growth since then out of cash flow. In fact, the family that gave us the money originally committed $7.5 million. We only spent 4.7 of it. And then we started paying for everything out of cash flow. And, you know, our run rate right now is $150 million. We almost $120 million in revenue over the last 12 months. It's just been, you know, I tell people sometimes it's like I'm the pilot of a rocket ship. Most of the times it's like I'm strapped to the side of a rocket ship. But,
right.
But it's been this unbelievable adventure, and it's been fueled out of profit. You know, we've not gone back to the well. We don't have a partner writing checks. Sometimes I'll read online, you know, oh, billionaires pay for all of this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, man, if only. Think of how much easier that would be.
Yeah, I mean, if you know any, go ahead and slide them our way.
Yeah, exactly.
Jeremy, you know the rules. We got some sponsors who put this show on the air. You're used to it with Daily Wire. GhostBed.com/drinking bros is our title sponsor on this show. Finest mattresses in the land. Right now, they got two free pillows
when you buy a mattress at ghostbed.com/drinkingbros. And that's a hell of a savings, kids. Hell of a savings. The pillows are a little bit pricey, but they're worth it. They last forever. Cooling pillows. They're about 20 degrees cooler than the rest of your room. They're phenomenal. I don't know what patent they have on that technology, but it's amazing. And it's the same thing that goes into the mattresses themselves as well. I've got that cooling mattress. I love it more than anything. It's in every room of my house. Huge fan of that. I'm also a huge fan of their adjustable base, which you can put together with a mattress and get 40% off right now. Their bundle package, it's got USB ports, flashlights, you name it, they got it at ghostbed.com/drinkingbros. Or if you just want 30% off everything in the entire store, you can put that weighted blanket in there. Their sheets are amazing. Or you can just get just the mattress or just the pillows, whatever you want. Put it in the cart, type in the promo code Drinking Bros for 30% off. And as always, at ghostbed.com/drinkingbros, they got a 60-month pay-as-you-go program. No interest if you have decent credit. So you can walk out of there with a brand new bedroom set for about $20-25 a month at ghostbed.com/drinkingbros. Next up, we got Diet Smoke. Let's go, dude. Let's go. DietSmoke.com. Promo code DRINKINGBROS is going to get you 20% off. I talk about Diet Smoke even when they're not on the show. I fucking love Diet Smoke, man. I have one of these almost every single night. Diet Smoke is THC that's 100% legal, even in states where cannabis is not. Diet Smoke is less expensive than dispensaries. That's true. I just ordered, 8 jars of it. There was 30 in each jar. They got 2 flavors. It was watermelon, blue raspberry, and I think it came to $90 a piece for 3 or 4 of those things. And then they have some, buy one, get one program. It's rad, dude. But it's the best, and it saved me trips to Vegas, LA, all that shit, just going into dispensaries and then trying to carry it back on the plane, worried if it was going to get melted. Grandmothers shipping it through the mail. My wife, her mom actually owns a weed store in LA. She was shipping me some gummies. They fucking melted, dude. I can't do that shit. They got it all locked in at dietsmoke.com. American made. Each Diet Smoke gummy is infused with 10 milligrams of THC derived from American grown hemp. Plus, it's all natural. It's a smooth high. The thing that I love about these things is that you know what you're getting every single time. It's never different. It's not like a bag of edibles you get down the road in Denver where you're like, man, this one hit me really hard. The other ones hit me kind of light. They're delicious. Money back guarantee if you don't like it, so you can return it. It's that perfect medium high. So if you're not 100% satisfied, they will give you your money back on it. No questions asked. They're not going to fucking ask you how high you were or how high you weren't. We may call ourselves the Drinking Bros, but we moonlight as the Stoner Bros too. So if you're like us and you're too old for gravity bongs, enjoy the smooth, balanced high of Diet Smoke. Right now, Diet Smoke is offering our listeners an incredible discount. When you go to dietsmoke.com, use the promo code Drinking Bros, you'll get 20% off all of their Delta 8 THC gummies. Go to dietsmoke.com, promo code Drinking Bros to get 20% off. That's dietsmoke.com, promo code Drinking Bros for 20% off Diet Smoke's THC gummies. Let's go, fam. Last but not least, we got hardafseltzer.com. Whew. The original flavors are still available. Summertime, we're changing them out. Get the OGs while they're still here. We got the peach, we got the blue raz, we got the strawberry shortcake, and we got the lemon lime. You're going to want to grab those now. We're getting some new flavors in over the summer, and we're going to pop those out. This is just fucking hard seltzer, 8%. That gets shipped right to your house, dude. Let's go. Spring is here. Summertime's around the corner. It's time to get fucked up. We made hard seltzer hard again. God damn it, 8%. We're one of the only companies on the market that actually does that, and it tastes amazing. So, dude, you're not going to – it's not like drinking fucking Four Loko or some bullshit like that or whatever that White Claw Surge is. Jesus Christ, dude. Shit's horrific. Go to hardafseltzer.com today. We ship to 42 states, and get a case shipped to your house. We greatly appreciate it. We'll be expanding into stores very, very soon, starting with Tennessee first. Texas will be next, and Florida is on the way. In the meantime, go to hardafseltzer.com and have it shipped to your house right now.
You could, with a billionaire backing you, you could, I don't know, run for judge or district attorney and have a policy of just releasing criminals and still win.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be fine. That's all you need. You just need a good billionaire behind you. Yeah. And look,
all we need.
Dan and I are the same way, by the way. So with Drinking Bros and Tetherball Academy Media, it's the same. We've never gone into debt. We've never taken any we've never taken any outside financing. Mm-hmm. So all of this was created on our own.
We sure would like to.
Yeah, yeah. We sure would like
not
to.
Not for this, but for the booze.
Yeah, exactly. as we went along, because we started in 2015.
The booze is different, man. That's a capital-intensive business. You're going to need
We got to buy a shitload of cans. We got to buy 5 million cans soon.
Cans, yeah. Yeah, because there's an aluminum shortage. Yeah. So thanks, Joe Biden.
Brutal.
Dude, there's a shortage on everything. But, you know, with that, we started in 2015 as well, out of a garage. And then as we slowly moved up, we ended up in, what, one small studio that was...
A slightly larger garage,
A basically. Slightly larger garage, essentially, and then
but
a bigger studio.
It had air conditioning and shit.
It did have AC, at least.
Oh, man.
That was...
But we had to turn it off in between shows, because it was so loud. It was one of those... huge squares, and then, you know, all the stuff you see before you now. But same thing, man. We've been cash flow positive, haven't gone into debt, and all of this has been paid for on our own. And because we got to chat at that one lunch, it was interesting because at the time I didn't know really anybody else who had a media company and who was doing it. I think there's you guys, Wondery, Your Mom's House. There's a few others, but there's not many.
Well, those other ones are pretty much single media distribution platforms, right? So they do either they do a podcast or they do blogging or whatever, but Daily Wire does everything, right? I mean, I guess now they do everything, but even back then you were doing most stuff. You've added films and now children's programming as well. So you guys are pretty much in every part of the media now.
But even back then we were doing video shows, podcasts, written articles,
Yeah, and with the movies, we've had a lot of guests on who have been starring in the movies that are coming out and everything. I'm assuming, obviously, that's your background in Hollywood, which is why you got into it. How has that been, and have they been successful?
Yeah, so the first film that we released, we acquired, it was called Run, Hide, Fight. Dallas Sonier, who made Bone Tomahawk, is sort of his, I mean, he's made probably made 45 films, but Bone Tomahawk was his definite classic hit. Had made Run, Hide, Fight, and it's, you know, it's Die Hard during a school shooting, and the movie premiered at Venice, and not one person wanted to buy it. You know, great response from the audience, terrible response from the critics, terrible response from the studios, because they were afraid of it. You know, that's not the kind of story that Hollywood's interested in. And so Dallas called me during that time in 2020 when we were realizing, you know, the world is changing, we should make a move. We started looking pretty actively, and fortunately, Dallas gave me a call. He said, "Hey, I've got this movie. Nobody's going to release it. I think it's perfect for your audience." I was super skeptical. As you guys know, almost every movie is bad. Like, making a movie, it's a miracle that any movie gets made. It's a double miracle if it's good.
Yeah. It's usually about 1 out of 6, I think, is the industry standard.
Man, if you can get 1 out of 10, I think you're good. I mean, it's so hard because there's so many people involved.
Yeah.
And you can fuck up the process from the director, the script, the editor, even bad coloring or, you know, a bad soundtrack.
Sound design.
Yeah. Yes. I wonder what the original budget for Avatar 2 and 3 were and what they have. Like, they've certainly surpassed that by now. Because
God, dude. Like, those have got to be into, what, $300 million somewhere in there?
I mean, that would have been, that probably, like, $250 to $300 would have been the original budget for one of those, probably. But they've gone, like... But with the post-production stuff, they've gone, had to have gone way over that.
They're
right?
years behind in that. And with yours, what are your budgets on those?
You know, sub-5 right now.
Okay.
but, you know, you can do a lot when you're not having to pay all the overhead that comes with making movies in the system. You know, so we acquired Run, Hide, Fight, and the movie paid for itself in 7 days.
Wow.
Our audience was so hungry for this kind of a move. It really validated what we were trying to do. We produced a film called Shut In that we released at the beginning of the year. This year, DJ Caruso directed that for us. Rainey Qualley starred in it. Terrific film. We acquired our third film, which is called The Hyperions with Cary Elwes. It's a terrific, completely different than anything we've contemplated up until this point. And then we have Terror on the Prairie with Gina Carano dropping in June.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I know where we live in sort of the popular imagination. I know what people think when you tell them Gina Carano and the Daily Wire are making a movie. And people are going to lose their minds with how good this movie is. It's kind of a triumph. I couldn't be more stoked about it.
Yeah, I saw the trailer. It looks amazing. How is Gina to work with?
Gina's a dream. You know, she's a little shell-shocked, right? I mean, she went through something that most people cannot relate to, which is the machine came for her and took her entire life away from her. And that'll leave you rattled, even if you're she's a tough broad, but that's quite a trauma that she went through. But she, I mean, even her detractors will tell you, she's one of the most gracious, generous people. She loves people. She loves the people around her. She wants to do right by them. And she brought her A-game to this project. I mean, she just did a terrific job.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that film coming out. I'm curious, so what the reaction has been from Hollywood. Usually you go out to Breakdown Services. It's got the production company attached to it. Are you guys able to put produced by Daily Wire or your production company on there? And are you worried that it'll detract actors from great scripts that might not have anything to do with conservatism or your audience?
Yeah, so it's a challenge, no question about it. We've had people who won't work with us, but we've had people who will.
Well, you've been navigating this for a while because you were the ED for FOA for a while, right? Like this is nothing new, navigating these waters, right?
Yeah, I mean, say I was the ED for what? I'm sorry.
For a Friends of Abe back in the day.
Yeah. That's right. For Friends of Abe.
Yeah, like you know how it is. I mean, it's
that's right.
It used to be easier back then, probably. Like everybody kind of knew John Voight was conservative, but he was a great actor, so it was like fine. But now, and people say this stupid shit to me all the time. Like, I don't know how can you work with people that are back in the day. Like, I don't know how anybody ever worked together like this. Like, because nobody fucking cared, dude.
Nobody cared
because it was a better world.
Yeah.
Like it was a better world. God. And God, listen, this is important. Like people, I am deliberately steering into the culture war, right? Daily Wire is tearing things apart. But I want to be super clear that in my view, it's like mutually assured destruction. Like, it's immoral to use nuclear weapons, but it's more immoral to let your enemy use nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't like the bifurcation of the culture. I don't like the bifurcation of the economy. I don't like that people don't want to work with us because of our politics or that our own audience may not watch something if we use the wrong person. I think that's a pretty shitty world. Mm. But a more shitty world is the one where we just let the left drive us out of every institution and we don't fight back. My honest belief is that if we continue to build alternatives, if we create an actual economic consequence for them driving us out of our own culture, you will also create an economic incentive for them to change their behavior. So I really think it's like we have to reach a kind of parity with them. It's probably not true parity, but a kind of parity with them in all of these areas, from freaking hard seltzer to razors to kids content to movies to news to where you get your coffee, you name it. All of this stuff, we have to actually become successful so that there's no longer any way for them to gain market share without actually having to moderate and compete for our business. Right now, they can say that my audience is inexcusable, completely secure in the knowledge that my company or that my audience still has to buy their crappy razors.
Right.
I say crappy not because their razors are crappy, but because the whole idea that I have to buy your razor is crap.
Yeah.
The whole idea that you can talk about me the way that you do and still cash my checks is crap. Yeah. I know I'm a partisan and I know the Daily Wire is partisan. I know we're sort of doubling down on the cultural divide. But honest to God, what I want is to get back to the 90s. What I want is to get back to a world where you can be who you are and I can be who I am and we can disagree over a beer tonight and during the rest of our day, we can live like normal, actual human beings and collaborate with one another and have friendships with one another and create a better world. It sounds so sappy now. I'm actually embarrassed that I'm telling you guys this, but that's it. I basically just want to live in the 90s. But with Wikipedia, that's what I want.
Yeah, I mean, it's a couple things on that. I don't think any business is so robust that they can shed 50% of their customers and still
that's right.
pay their bills.
Yeah.
Or definitely not if it's a publicly traded company, right? Mm-hmm. That's just not how that goes. the other thing about, you know, people who are that grew up in the same general area, maybe will be, let's say they're Big Ten football fans, right?
Yeah.
And one of them's a Penn State alum and one of them's an Ohio State alum. And that used to be a thing where that that debate or shit talking or whatever it is between those two people is something that sustained their friendship for decades. Just that one thing.
Yeah.
The only thing they had in common is that they liked college football, but they hated each other's teams.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So conflict is intrinsic to this whole process of humanity. It's the whole fucking point.
That's right.
And we've made this entire Xennial generation, and now that's informing all these corporate dum-dums. We've made them completely intolerant of any sort of discomfort whatsoever.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, what exactly do you expect the product of somebody who is anti-discomfort to be? You know what I mean? Like, you can't eliminate discomfort, so you have to eliminate the perception of it. So now you're changing the way you see reality.
Oh, yeah.
That's a big fucking problem that I don't know if people understand how big of a problem that is. Like, if you don't believe in gravity, that's cool, man. Jump off the fucking cliff and see what happens.
Yeah.
Because you'll become a believer on the way down.
But the best way to change it is what you're doing, Jeremy, yeah. with entertainment. I mean, look, Hollywood, like it or not, has a huge power over children, over the way you grow up, over your beliefs, over what you think, over what you see, and what you talk about at school if you don't have an alternative to what's out there right now. Because if you watch a commercial or a TV show or a movie these days, you think that everybody's trans, gay, everybody's a mixed couple. You know, there's somebody's got a disability, and you're like, God damn it, man! Can we just watch one thing that makes sense? With what you're doing, at least you're able to influence the next generation coming up. Because without it, there is no one in Hollywood on the right who's even remotely close to doing something like what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean that is the goal, right? We want to be able to. Well, for one thing, I just want people who see the world the way that I see it to be able to get through any part of their day without being lectured, without being openly insulted. You make a good point, and I think it's one of the reasons that you guys have been very successful, and a lot of guys who are War on Terror veterans, I think are doing amazing things right now in the economy and in the culture, and I'm sure on some level it's because you guys learn that lesson that you just articulated, which is that you can't eliminate discomfort from your life, that you have to find a way to win in the face of that, in the face of mm-hmm. actual hardship. I can't lay claim to that. My journey is just that I had no money and had never been west of Clovis, New Mexico, and loaded up the truck and moved to Beverly. You know, like, I went and faced far less extreme hardships, but the hardship of failure is really what helped me become whatever, you know, whatever success I have right now.
Yeah, but that's like
all of that said, though, there is a difference between facing adversity and overcoming adversity and believing that you don't have a place in your own country, believing you don't have a place in your own economy, believing you don't have a place in your own culture. And I think that if you let an entire generation be raised in this moment where they have no safe harbor in their own physical world, you're not going to raise people who know how to overcome hardship. You're going to raise people who don't believe there's anything but hardship. And I really worry about the sort of victim mentality that the left has peddled, in particular to Black America, and more and more to women, and more to other minorities. I think that's the most crippling, addicting, evil ideology that's ever been promulgated. And I worry about a generation of people who believe broadly what the three of us believe. I'm not saying that we have the same politics, not saying we vote exactly the same way, but the things, the places where the Venn diagram crosses for the three of us, I worry about people who share those values actually being raised to see themselves as victims of circumstances that they can't change in their own country, in their own economy, in their own culture. Because if we get to that place, we'll well and truly have lost all the things that we value. So, yeah, I want to build a world where they realize that that kind of the experiences we got to have on our way up, the country we were born into, still exists.
Yeah,
and so they know that they can go out and build alternatives. Right. They can build the world they want.
Being able to take being able to take risk and then learning how to manage risk throughout your life is a big, big deal. Brett Weinstein and Heather Haying talk about it in all pretty much every book they fucking write. They're incredible people, but a lot of people are talking about it now. It's finally kind of mainstream to say that there is a huge hole in the West because of the absence of religion. Now, I'm not religious at all, but I do understand that the journey.
Go jump off the cliff.
Yeah, exactly. The journey that we're all on is finding purpose in solving problems, right? That's what fulfills human beings, whether it's motherhood or fatherhood or your work or activism or charity or whatever it is, right? The thing that fulfills people very clearly is finding purpose in solving these challenges that we all have, enduring, right? Resilience. Yeah. And we've like jettisoned all that. Like that's, it's
well, you can only do it if you believe that victory is possible.
That's true too. Yeah. So like that's the point I'm kind of getting at, giving people that, lighthouse, I guess, for lack of a better phrase, that this can be done. And not only can it be done, but here's how to do it. You know what I mean? That's a big deal for people.
Victory isn't guaranteed, and victory isn't everlasting, and it isn't absolute, right? Mm. I mean, everything you guys have, you can lose. Everything that I've built can fall. Some versions of what you have, you will lose, and some versions of what I have built will fall. Hopefully, not everything, right? I mean, we'll keep getting back up, and we'll keep innovating, and we'll keep trying. But it is because while victory isn't permanent and victory isn't absolute and victory isn't guaranteed, victory is possible. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that we know. We have come through our own experiences to believe that the risk is worthwhile and that you can accomplish good. And I think in doing that, you actually become far less afraid of failure. And if you believe that failure is the guarantee of life, you'll never try. But if you believe that both failure and success are both going to come your way, you come to depend on the success less and you come to fear the failure less. And I think that that's what real freedom is. That's the real freedom that the West has always provided. And America in particular is this, the place where you can try and fail and then try again.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's, as a 90s kid myself, I think the metaphor I like to use is video games. If the video game is too easy, I'm going to put the controller down and go do something else. If it's too hard and I can't win, then I'm going to put the controller down and go do something else. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like just to be engaged in something. It's basic human psychology. Mm-hmm. You have to know that winning is possible. I think it's important to know that failure is inevitable, right?
Yeah.
That's just how it is, man. Why would you expect to go through everything in life and everything just go the right way? What the hell kind of, maybe that's just growing up back in the day, but I can't like wrap my head around that.
Me neither. And speaking of victory, how did you guys become victorious against YouTube? I mean, I'm looking at your numbers here. Ben Shapiro's got 4.4 million subscribers. Daily Wire's got 2.73. That is one avenue we haven't been able to crack. We finally actually, after 5 years now, we got to talk to somebody from YouTube who actually works there and said, hey, you guys are shadow banned on the back end. We can work on X, Y, and Z and then try to figure this out later. How did you guys break through on that side?
Yeah. We hired an amazing team. My social video team is, I don't think there's certainly nobody else like it in conservative media. And I doubt that there's two or three in the world anywhere. They're innovative. They come to me with ideas all the time. I don't even get the ideas. They pitched, we have this new host, Brett Cooper, who's doing comment section. The show is an unbelievable smash hit. I think in her first 3 weeks doing the show, she has almost 200,000 subscribers on her YouTube channel.
You're kidding.
Part of it's that she is the female. Pull up a picture and tell me she isn't the female Ben Shapiro. Once you see it, you can't unsee it.
What's her name? What's her name again? We'll pull it up on screen.
Yeah, Brett Cooper.
Brett Cooper. Bob, yeah. Pull that up.
The show's called Comment Section.
Okay.
My point is they came in and showed this show to me, and I did not get the show. The show is not for, it's not for men who grew up in the 90s. That's not what this show is. But I knew it was something. I can see the show and know that it's good, even though
there it is.
it is not for me, right? But this is what they do. They come to me with these ideas and they say, we will make this work. Give us the resources and we will make this work. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, if I back them, it works. We have a whole philosophy in the company that I'll share with you, which is I give this speech, this new member orientation speech once a month to all of our new employees. And I always tell them a handful, you know, usually the same stuff. And one of the things I tell them is, you know, hypothetically, I may one day fire you over a mistake. I can't say that I won't. It is imaginable that you could make a mistake for which there were no answer other than termination. But I don't think I've ever fired someone for a mistake. I think that what I fire people for are, I fire people when they can't own their mistakes. That's the most offensive thing to me in an employee. I can't tolerate an employee who believes that their past successes excuse mistakes. I can't handle people who can't take responsibility. I mean, I guess ultimately that's what I'm telling you. And so when people come in, our traffic goes down, and people come in and I say, why did the traffic go down? If you say, well, Facebook's algorithm, blah, 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 I'm just going to fire you.
Right.
Like, that's the thing I can't abide. Facebook's algorithm and YouTube's algorithm, they change constantly. The whole point of artificial intelligence is it's always changing, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you say, well, they're biased against us, I'm going to fire you. Of course they're biased against us. All of Silicon Valley's biased against us, some more than others. I think Facebook less than YouTube and YouTube less than Twitter, but there is incredible bias in every one of these organizations against our position. We knew that going in.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, what are we doing about it? And one reason that we succeed on Facebook, which offends the left so badly, and on YouTube, is because I just demand that we change and innovate at least as often as they change and innovate. You know, when traffic goes down, I want to know why. It's not enough to say they don't like conservatives. The Daily Wire has been the number one publisher in the world in terms of engagement for 15 straight months on Facebook.
Wow.
So yeah, Facebook hates conservatives. We're still number one. Not only that, the algorithm has changed numerous times during those 15 months. One way I can prove it is if you go back in time 15 months and look at our total engagement, it was double what our total engagement was last month. But we're still number one. Mm. Why? Well, because the New York Times engagement also went down 50%.
Right.
So in the sort of nonprofit conservative space, it's very easy to just say, Facebook took away our traffic. They hate conservatives. Give us your money and raise a quick $1 million off of small dollar donations. But I'm a for-profit company. I can only win by winning.
Yep.
So I have to know what changed. Why did it change? How do we stay dominant even in this new reality?
Yeah.
And that's what my team is good at that I don't think anybody else, not many other people in my movement are very good at, is you know, taking ownership of what's happening, not resting on your past successes, and going and creating a new success. And I would say that no one in my company is better at that than my YouTube team.
Right. Yeah, you guys are, I mean, especially YouTube, you guys have, I think that's, like you said, the higher barrier to entry when it comes to a lot of this bullshit.
Yep.
Because it's their algorithm is woven into the entirety of like 80% of search traffic on Earth, right? So there's a lot more barrier to entry just to get your content seen in the first place.
And they hate everything that you're for.
Yeah, for sure.
They don't want videos that have guns in them. They don't want to have videos that have smoke in them. They don't want to have videos that have alcohol in them. They don't. So you're fighting an uphill battle. But again, you can overcome it.
Yeah, we went through all this at Black Rifle, and it was ultimately we were staying ahead of their algorithm pretty well because we just, I mean, it wasn't that, honestly, it's not that difficult for when you're selling an actual product. It's not that difficult. When you're just trying to get eyeballs, it can be problematic, but if you're selling an actual product like that, I don't think it's that difficult. And ultimately it led to, like, even at the end of the day, you can buy your way out of most of these situations, especially on Facebook. Like, we were spending a couple $100,000 a month in advertising, and finally they called us. Like, hey, what can we do to help you out? I'm like, stop fucking us over.
Yeah, that's right.
And they're like, oh, well, here's some companies that are consultant companies that can help you navigate these things. I'm like, so you guys create these rules, and then you pay or you allow people to fucking consult on your behalf to help us break your own rules. This sounds a lot like attorneys.
Yeah.
Doesn't it? Yeah. Like, what the fuck are we doing here, man?
Well, I think that the success of Black Rifle Coffee in a lot of ways is similar in kind to the success of the Daily Wire, and it's that both organizations take a marketing first approach. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, the biggest lie ever told is if you build it, they will come. Mm. No, they won't.
Yeah.
You got to tell them about it.
Eyeballs matter.
Eyeballs matter. And in conservatism in particular, and this is changing, I think, in part because of the success of Daily Wire and other organizations like PragerU who take a similar approach. But historically, it's been considered almost unseemly to market your ideas. It's like, well, that's the entire point of our operation, is to expose people to our values, expose people to our content. How are you supposed to do that? And people say, well, how do you make a viral video? What kind of question is that? I don't know. There's this great story. I'm trying to remember who told me this, but this kind of classic story of someone was involved in one of these big mergers when, I think it's when Sony acquired Columbia, and they were trying to explain to these, you know, this Japanese electronics company how the movie industry works. And they were saying, you know, what we do is we make, you know, I don't know the real numbers, but, you know, we make 25 movies a year, and, you know, six of them will be bombs, and, you know, 10 of them will be kind of break even, and four of them will be hits. But we make enough on the hits that it leaves us money ahead, even on the bombs and the break evens. Mm. And the head of Sony at that time said, I'm sorry, why don't you just make only hits? It's like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You got us.
Yeah, so Sony did something smarter, though. You know, Blu-ray was theirs. So every Blu-ray you bought back in the day, you owed a nickel. So they got 5 cents for every single Blu-ray, and then you had to clear it with Sony. And that went on for years and years and years. So good for them. But yeah, now look, if you have, I think studios are making somewhere around 10 movies a year.
Oof.
10, tops. Some of them are just down to 8. The rest of them went streaming. And yeah, if you have 4 hits, that's a big, big year for you.
Big year.
Yeah. You guys, it seems like you haven't missed these days. And it's been amazing to see. We appreciate you being on today. Now's the point in the show we get to the Drinking Bro of the Week, which is someone who has inspired you or helped you become the person you are today. Who would you like to give the Drinking Bro of the Week to?
Oh, man. I didn't know that this was coming. Someone who's inspired me. I'm going to give it to my friend Alan Estrin. Alan Estrin is the founder of PragerU. He's Dennis Prager's longtime producer of his syndicated radio show. And Alan is not the only man who has given me a lot of opportunities in my life, but he's the first one whose name popped to mind when you asked who I would give it to. This is a guy who made big investments, I think, big investments in me, not financial, but gave me a lot of opportunity to hone my abilities as a writer. Gave me a lot of opportunities to hone my abilities as a producer and as a businessman, and gave me a lot of great insights and encouragement over the years. And I'd like to offer him a big thanks as my recommended Drinking Bro of the Week.
Cheers. Yeah, cheers to him. Real quick here before we get off, what was Breitbart like in real life?
Oh, my. You can't. That guy. When people die, it is cliche to say, we'll never see their like again. He was one of a kind. And it's not true. It's never been more true than of Andrew Breitbart. He was the most genuinely unique humans I have ever met. You know, it's been 10 years since he died. He was 10 years older than I am. He was an absolute force of nature, a madman. But I would say that what people don't know about him, in particular because the most famous moment in his life was right at the end. Mm-hmm. It was those last 6 months. It was hashtag war. It was righteous indignation. It was this sort of black and white screaming Andrew Breitbart that we that we see. But that was, I mean, honestly, that was 6 months of Andrew's life. What he really was a happy, manic, ADD, hilarious, irreverent lunatic who hated bullies. He wasn't even particularly conservative. I mean, that's the dirty little secret of Andrew. If he were here and you were asking him issue after issue after issue, you'd be like, I don't think this guy's a conservative at all. And that's true. He's not. He was a liberal. You know, he wasn't a leftist.
Right.
But he was a liberal in the classic sense. He was a Hollywood guy. I mean, a media guy. He was a guy of almost endless capacity. The first time I met him, I was sitting at my very first Friends of Abe lunch. And there's this guy who wouldn't look up from his laptop while everybody's going around talking. And you come to find out it's because he, at that time, was editing the Drudge Report at the lunch table while we're all having this big lunch. He was just that kind of guy. He could do so much. His capacity was so great. He listened to crappy, weird, you know, British 80s bands and as I say, hated a bully. His entire conservatism was essentially a response to Ted Kennedy and Joe Biden's treatment of Clarence Thomas at that Supreme Court hearing with Anita Brown.
Anita Hill, thank you.
He just despised the unabashed bullying that he saw come from the hardcore left. And as it got more and more pronounced during the Bush years, during the War on Terror, and he would see, you know, Bush compared to Hitler and killing babies and all that vitriol that came out of the left, as he would see that be mainstreamed, that is what put him on his crusade, is the mainstreaming of that leftist bullying. The guy, I mean, some of the most unique moments that ever happened in American media, I mean, rollerblading up to a bunch of protesters and inviting them to Arby's, yeah. I'm sorry, to Applebee's, and they went, That is who he actually was. Like, if you wonder, what was Andrew Breitbart like in person? It's that. And the greatest moment, I honestly believe, the greatest moment of political theater in American history to date is the Anthony Weiner press conference.
Oh, yeah.
Where Breitbart just walked on stage and started holding court at Anthony Weiner's press conference. Who had the balls to do something like that? Who had the sense of humor in politics? Who in politics has the sense of humor to do something like that? Only Andrew Breitbart. And I'll tell you, the last conversation I ever had with Andrew, who was a true mentor and friend, and I say that as a guy who also knows that, like many famous people, I knew Andrew very well and not at all.
Mm, yeah.
The number of people who truly knew Andrew is like Larry Soloff, Susie and the kids, and maybe Orson Bean. I mean, it's a tiny group of people. Because when you met Andrew, you were immediately an intimate. So if you were sitting next to him in first class on a flight, you got off that plane and woke up the next day worried about him because you were like, Andrew Breitbart is my best friend. I know so many intimate details about his life. Because you were like at six the second you met him. And if you knew him for a decade, you got to seven. Right? So like the difference between me who knew him so well and you guys who maybe didn't meet him at all, there's not that much difference. But the last phone call I ever have with the guy, he would call sometimes at weird hours and just go off. You know, there was something on his mind. And when he would go into one of these, and I'm hardly the only one, there are probably 100 people. That guy on the airplane was probably on the speed dial, you know, and got the same phone call. All you could do was throw in your headphones, hit mute, and get on with life. So in this particular occasion, I needed some shampoo, so I go into Target over on like Van Nowen, kind of in North Hollywood, and I threw in the headphones, and Andrew's going on and on and on about this thing that he's pretty pissed off about, this other conservative media company who I won't mention. And you know, George Soros himself couldn't hurt us more than this so-and-so with his stupid ideas and all this. And every now and then I'd unmute it and go, oh yeah, he's a real son of a bitch, you know, and remute it and go find some more shampoo. Wait, the way my very last interaction with Andrew, though, this has been going on for 45 minutes. I bought all my shampoo. I'm back in my truck. And Andrew is still going strong. And he says, and you know, I'm out here having to do it. You know, I'm not worth $1 billion and I'm having to do it from the ground up. And you know, nobody's helping me. And this guy's out there doing so much damage and he has all this money. And oh shit, I just rear-ended somebody. I got to go. Click. And I am not kidding you. That is the second call I had with Andrew that ended in a car wreck.
No shit. That's hilarious.
Yeah, he was just a machine gun, that guy. And for most of his life, He was a machine gun of passion and joy. And only in that little window at the end was he a machine gun of sort of passion and outrage. And in some ways, I know that character is a hero. You know, hashtag war is iconic. But it's also kind of a tragedy that that's the thing, that's the moment Andrew is most remembered for. Because for all of us who knew him, he was so full of life. And his passion always manifested in humor and vibrance. And so that's certainly how I remember him and wish other people had the opportunity to remember him as well.
That's the thing about leadership, though. Most people that want power don't deserve it. And the people that don't really want it are typically the ones that you need to be in power. And it usually has a pretty negative effect on them, to be honest. It's not an easy thing to lead.
No, and with Breitbart in particular, wasn't it a heart attack, if memory serves me correct? Like, outside?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was just, I mean, boom, and that was it. It was strange, because he was a young guy.
Yeah, 43.
Yeah.
He had a cardiac episode that most people don't know about 6 or 9 months earlier. And in one of the real peculiar moments in my life, I was very concerned with him. It was sort of right when he was turning down this path of being more angry. He had taken some blows. There was the Sherrod Brown thing. He had felt a little betrayed by people in the movement who didn't stand by him during that. And I think he actually, even by some of my pals, I think they mistreated Andrew in that moment and handled it the wrong way. I mean, you guys know we talk for a living, and sometimes we just say the wrong thing or get on the wrong side, and it's hard to pivot. And some of our pals did that with Andrew. And he was staying up late fighting with randos on Twitter, and you could see real phrase starting to form in his personal life. And another conservative commentator, Bill Whittle, and I were both concerned about Andrew, and we called him up and we said, "Hey, we want to take you out to dinner." So we took him to Ribs USA in Burbank, and we were telling him, "Hey, Andrew, you know, pal, you got to let up. You got to let go. You're going to die of a heart attack. I mean, you're a young guy, but your freaking heart's going to explode. You've got to get back to the joy. You've got to put Twitter down." And because he was kind of in one of his manic states, he couldn't stop. He was like, yeah, but let me show you. That he literally pulled out like an iPad and started playing something for me in the middle of me trying to have an intervention with him. And I was like, "Andrew, stop it, brother. I'm telling you, you're going to die if you keep living like this." I'm not kidding you. The next day, or maybe at most 2 days later, my phone rings, and it's Andrew Breitbart, and he's in the hospital. And I knew he was in the hospital. Obviously, it's a small circle of Hollywood conservatives, and he had had this cardiac incident. And he calls me from the hospital. And he says, "Hey, Jeremy, it's Andrew." And I was like, "Yeah, man, how are you doing?" He goes, Did you hear? I had this basically a heart attack." I was like, Yeah, I heard, Andrew." He said, "Well, it's not lost. I just wanted to call and say it's not lost on me that you spoke a word of prophecy. You're essentially a prophet." And I laughed and said, Yeah, I'm sorry to say, I think I am." I said, what have you learned?" He says, "Oh, yeah, I've definitely learned my lesson. I have to start eating better." And I was like, "No, damn it. I mean, yes, you do also have to do that. But no, you have to let some of this go. Let the fight go." I said, "Like, for example, why are you on your phone in the hospital? Like, put it down, you know." But there was no stopping him. And that's the tragedy of Andrew, but it's also the beauty of Andrew. And one of the saddest things to me is that I did have that intervention with him. I'm probably not the only one who had that intervention. But I was also cheering him on because I wanted him on that wall, because there was nobody doing as much good at that time as him. And so in some ways, when I think about Andrew's death, I feel that little bit of guilt, too, that we who knew him and loved him knew that he probably was in danger from the way that he was conducting the fight at the end. But son of a bitch, we loved watching him do it. Nobody could do it the way he did.
Yeah, Breitbart still lives on today.
Amen.
Yeah, it's still living on. We appreciate you being here. Jeremy'sRazors.com, you got to check it out. Or are you still at IHateHarrys.com? Do you still have that one as well?
I'll be at IHateHarrys.com for as long as it's funny.
I don't know that it will ever not be funny until Harry's comes out and says, please stop stealing our customers. Tell everybody else where they can find you.
IHateHarrys.com, JeremysRazors.com, of course, The Daily Wire. And I think I'm also on Twitter for a good time, at Jeremy D. Boring on Twitter.
Yeah, and again, thanks for being on the show. You're a guy that's never changed over the years. I met you years ago at a FOA event. Kevin Sorbo took me. You've been very consistent throughout your entire career, just kind, thoughtful, smart, and you're in my opinion, keeping up the same fight as Breitbart did. So thank you for all you do, and we appreciate your time today. For D'Anthony Holloway, I'm Ross Patterson. This is the Drinking Bros Podcast. Good night, everyone. First and foremost, our title sponsor, OmahaSteaks.com. Promo code Drinking Bros. Gonna get you an extra $35 off at checkout. When it comes to Father's Day, some things never change. Dads want steak. A recent survey shows 75% of Americans agree there's no better way to spend Father's Day than grilling with the family. From USDA certified tender steaks to burgers and more, Omaha Steaks delivers the world's best steak experience, guaranteed to secure your spot as dad's favorite. Shop OmahaSteaks.com and give dad the legendary heartland quality he deserves. Plus, our listeners get an extra $35 off with the promo code Drinking Bros at checkout. Here's what I love about Omaha Steaks. It's easy to use. Shows up right at your house. In a huge styrofoam cooler full of dry ice, even in the hot, hot state of Texas down here. It keeps it nice and cool. Shit, mine, I was gone for 36 hours, dude, and it was still great when I returned. Ton of options over there for Omaha Steaks as far as delivery goes. Now, obviously, the steaks are to die for. The fan favorite is the filet mignon, which has earned the coveted distinction of USDA certified tender, and their all new smash burgers are built for the grill, but they also carry mouthwatering chicken, pork, seafood, desserts, an easy to prepare comfort food. My wife loves the apple tart desserts they have over there. And each steak is perfectly aged to maximize tenderness and hand cut by master butchers. Omaha Steaks has been America's original butcher since 1917. They're a family-owned company with over 100 years of expertise in the meat industry. This Father's Day, give dad the world's best steak experience with Omaha Steaks. Visit OmahaSteaks.com for a guaranteed perfect gift that delivers legendary quality. And for an extra $35 off, use the promo code DRINKINGBROS at checkout. It is OmahaSteaks.com and an extra $35 off with the promo code Drinking Bros at checkout. Just go ahead and see this site for details. Brother!
We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's Upwork.com. Upwork.com.